Okay. Good morning. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, May 27, nearly full moon, I believe. Final class 60 in the series reading through Chittagong Gita and culminating discussion of life and times of Bhagwan Nityananda. I want to just make some comments. I don't know if I'm going to go the full hour. Now we have tree action outside. Good timing. So, the woodcutter is chopping right now. Good timing. So, I just wanted to give some comments on Nityananda. Pause. All right. Continuing with me and the bamboo cutter. Just thinking on the significance of Nityananda's incarnation, and I don't want to get into such detail of my feeling for him. That's more private, and that's not quite teachable, or I don't think that's important for me. But to share. But I never thought of myself as having a guru or seeking one. But if there's any teacher that I have that kind of warm feeling for, it's Nityananda. And his incarnation is remarkable. Now, everybody has their own opinion, and no one's opinion is necessarily any more correct than another, although some souls are more developed than others, you see. And that's the problem here, is nobody can see levels of development, so nobody is really, there's no objective standard that there are levels of development, of green, blue, indigo particularly, development of love and kindness and compassion, harmlessness, development of wisdom, intelligence, discernment, clarity, development of spiritual awareness, non-duality, freedom, alignment with higher self or with truth. there are no standards here. So yes, everybody's opinion is more or less as valuable or valid as anyone else's. On the other hand, some people are better informed than others. What I mean by that is people will argue for their guru. But in the end, how accurate their statements of things like my guru is, you know, an avadut, or my guru is a living Buddha, or he's perfect, or not, or she. In the end, we can't do very much with. because it's like, if it works for you, go for it. But if it doesn't work for me, leave me alone. And my perspective on him is just mine. And what I see with Nityananda is somebody who didn't start out as a normal human being traversing spiritual path to culmination, achievement, enlightenment. It really does look to me that he came in finished. Just like that comment he made, all that was done and completed in the womb to some women who were talking about him from another room while he was apparently meditating. His life is highly unusual. He basically was found like Moses in a crib by a by a forest scouring, hardworking village woman. And therefore had no clear parents. he was sort of in some kind of illness condition and then apparently miraculously saved by a strange man appearing to give a recipe for ghee and crow's meat to be rubbed on his body to bring him back to health as an infant. He was taken care of by a lawyer who found great devotion to him, but he ended up leaving that that well-off family in teenage years to go wander or something. So he was beginning his left home life as a itinerant yogi around age 12 or 13. And it wasn't that he was, I didn't look to me like he was searching for a teacher, but searching to do a certain work he knew he needed to do for this incarnation. Throughout the incarnation, he didn't go to teachers. Teachers came to him. He didn't go seeking guidance. Everyone came to him. Miracles were performed matter-of-factly, continually. It was a continued string of miraculous or supernatural manifestations or demonstration of city powers, with no real desire to gain from it personally. A very pure example of white magic or cities without ego. Ego, so-called, being third chakra blockage, nothing more. The distorted sense of self that associates with mind-body identification and some need to protect and embellish this puny sense of selfhood. I didn't see anything like that going on as thousands and thousands of people came to him over the decades. He basically was okay with them there, and he was okay with them not there. He was okay eating, he was okay not eating. He was okay wandering, and he was okay settled. And he wasn't so much of a teacher as a demonstrator or a revealer, a manifester. His life was a manifestation, absolutely a cosmic force. There wasn't a person there. And that's why he would say this one here, meaning this manifestation of Godhead one here in this body. He gave his life to the tens of thousands of people that continually thronged him asking for stuff. And by magic and a use of mind that is inconceivable to me, maybe it's conceivable to you, but probably not. He fulfilled their wishes again and again and again and again and again. You think he did that for himself? I don't think so. He even censured somebody saying something like, God doesn't need you to worship him. It's you who want something from God that is the basis of your worshiping. He didn't need students. He didn't need food. And he didn't need to be incarnate for his own benefit. Meanwhile, World Wars 1 and 2 were raging in his lifetime. India went through the convulsions of independence and then partition. He didn't stop genocides. Presumably, his incarnation mitigated, ameliorated, made more mild some of the genocides that humanity was perpetrating on itself in the 20th century. Presumably, possibly, hopefully, I would surmise. But he said, even Mahatma can't do everything, meaning Gandhi, meaning himself, meaning anyone. We can't redirect massive karmic stream and the collective planetary evolution is one such major karmic stream. Likewise, that is a useful teaching for us today. Most people don't know of Nityananda, and he didn't try to make himself known. Initially, he simply developed the jungle zone of Vajrasware and, in the south, and made it a town. And then later, for one reason or another, he ended up moving to Ganeshpuri and then just settled down, and then throngs and throngs of people surrounded him for decades while he granted their wishes. So this is a life of, looks to me like great self-sacrifice, but there's not much of a self there. This one, that one there made such sacrifice. I don't see other teachers doing that. I don't see other teachers like that. I can see who's still a person. And he wasn't still a person. He was finished with personhood. Meaning, he broke the eighth fetter, it looks to me. The eighth fetter being conceit, which is really tanamanas, or the craving of subjective mental identification. Mental subjective identity. Mental, conceptual, subjective identity. Broken as the entity leaves sixth density, going to seven, like Ross said, we no longer will have memory and identity. And then they become that one there, or that one here. So, I think he was finished with that. And finished with that means he didn't need anything from people. And he really seemed to be omnipotent, or something like that. And it's fitting that very few people will understand him. And it's fitting that very few people will know of him. It's fitting in this world, where people are so arrogant. Some people actually come to these videos to downvote them. Every week, some one or two people, probably, I have a sense of who they are, come to these videos every week to downvote. What a waste of your time. How silly. What a waste for yourself. If you don't like it, don't waste your time on things you don't like. You come here to make a point to downvote? Why? For me, because it's not public, so I see it. I feel pity for you. I think you don't know what you're doing. So, you don't like Nityananda? I don't know. You don't like me? I'm nothing. Who cares? I know I'm nothing compared to him. And you think you're better than him? You have a real problem. You think I'm doing him injustice? I don't think so. So, it's fitting that he appears and disappears unknown to the mass of humanity versus other gurus and great teachers who are well known, but not of his level, as far as I can tell. You know, Yogananda apparently did heavy injustice to his teacher, Sri Yukteswar, who seemed like a wonderful man. All sorts of other guys have scandals all around them, and they're very famous. Or you can see, I can see, they're not happy fellows. So this is a very particular collective consciousness here. And in many ways, it seems that service must be delivered despite them. They're helped despite themselves. So Nityananda came in invisibly or under the radar, lived and died nearly completely unknown or completely unknown to the vast majority of humans, vast majority of spiritual seekers, you know. Muktananda knows of him, and Rudi Rudrananda knew of him, and a few others, but nearly nobody figured out what was going on or saw him, had the karma to cross path and to have that light through our life, through their own life of an influence. That's just sort of the way it goes. And so I think that he was a stabilizing force for the planet in the 20th century. And just like in alignment with what the devotee's son said on the morning of his Mahasamadhi, where the son excitedly came to the parents and said, you've got to go see the master today. He's leaving. He's needed by the Council of Rishis to help with the Ashtanga Graha, or Ashtanga astrological configuration, which is a bad portent, you know, bad omen for India. Yeah, that's what he does. He's part of the Council of Saturn. He's part of the team that helps the solar system and the octave. And it's not common that members of the team come in like that to this planet to incarnate. And his purpose was clearly not verbal teaching. Chittakash Gita is not the purpose of his incarnation. It was simply, you know, from the notes here, recorded in Kannada by a cultured lady devotee in a who was then in a distressed condition of mind and simply sought his help and guidance in Mangalore, 1923-1928. That's from the one of the prefaces of the Chittakash Gita book from M.P. Pandit. This is from Ramanath Pai, P. Ramanath Pai. I think it's the son of the original publisher from Madras that published the book. But, I mean, he didn't come in to deliver extensive teachings like Aurobindo or someone. He didn't come in to start an ashram like Muktananda and make a big world organization or something like that. Same thing with, you know, it wasn't, his teacher didn't send him to the West like Yogananda. He criticized the people that went to the West, or he said, you know, that's good for those if you can't go there from here. Meaning, if you can't transmit your consciousness and an embodied physical form across the world, then you know to bring your body over there and travel. So, I mean, he's completely working at another level. And I have the highest love and respect for that being as an avatar. Looks to me like an avatar, a direct manifestation of the Logos or a guardian from eighth density. And what do you do with it? You can't. I mean, it's like the sun in the sky is the one and only sun in the sky. And that's that. There are lots of suns in other skies, but in our sky, there's just one sun. And it just is, and has a singular nature, singular in the sense that there's only one of them. It's one of a kind. And yes, everyone is unique, but it's not, it nearly never happens that avatars come into this world. It nearly never happens that guys who are that are qualified to be in the Council of Saturn take a human body. It just doesn't happen much. And I think, you know, I feel privileged in the sense of honored or I feel fortunate. You know, I appreciate a lot that I encountered him. Very similar to my feeling of encountering the raw material. You know, it's good not to forget glory, the glory of creation. You know, Earth, the cosmos is a beautiful place, really glorious, and humanity is totally distorted, generally, very highly distorted. We cannot plumb the depths of the distortions that infect your peoples, said Ra. Yeah, right. So the raw material is singular among channel documents among spiritual teachings on Earth, as what seems to me clearly a completely non-distorted transmission from late sixth density. And Nityananda likewise is singular in that beings that are really finished with the octave rarely take human body for a lifetime. And there didn't seem to be anything he didn't know. I mean, bear in mind, the tens of thousands of people that came to him asking for help, meaning, do this for me. His mental, his buddhi, needed to do calculation to determine how to arrange circumstances so they all got what they wanted. That's kind of a heavy-duty mental processing, it seems to me. And so he, to me, he's so far out of the league of everyone else I've seen. I mean, I consider him certainly a peer of Gautama. But I mean, if you see him with other, you know, and everybody gets very, territorial, my guru, your guru, it just doesn't matter. Everybody has their opinions, and it's nice to disagree. But I mean, when I see other great teachers, even, you know, Weibu Sayadaw or Ramana Maharshi, and then there are many others that, you know, I just don't know, like Baba Ram Das's guru, and the original Sai Baba, you know, Sai Baba Shirdi, and Yukteswar. I just wonder how they would compare to him. I mean, he might say that they're all the same, and that you know, don't come to me, go to the old man over there, as he said about the other Sai Baba, I believe. This is somebody looking, wondering if you should change gurus. But I see something different, and you know, maybe it's just the resonance of a seeker and any light source. There's going to be different resonance. And what rings your bell won't ring mine. What rings mine may or may not ring yours. Who I think is just wonderful, you may not. And it's good to find the one you think is really wonderful. Teacher teaching. Teachings and teachers that you find really wonderful, that make your heart sing, make your heart feel open heart, and some great happiness. So... let me read a little of Ramanath Pai's preface. And again, this is going to be the last discussion of Nityananda for the series. So this was the beginning preface to Voice of the Self from P. Ramanath Pai. I'm not going to read all of it. He wrote this epistle, meaning the Chittakash Gita. This epistle in its original form was first recorded in Kannada by a cultured lady devotee who was then in a distressed condition of mind and had, in a spirit of complete surrender, sought the Master's divine help and guidance during his sojourn in Mangalore during the years 1923-1928. The spontaneous words, as they came from the Master's mouth, appeared as though they were direct answers to unexpressed queries and doubts entertained by some of the close devotees who had gathered at his feet, and these were then faithfully recorded or chronicled. The Master, and again, you know, there's a little flowery language here, but that's not mine, it's his. The Master had then come out from his long retreat of yoga sadhana and deep penance, I'm not sure if he was in penance, in the remote mountain recesses of India, brimful of the knowledge of the highest truths, realized and often found himself in Bhava Samadhi, Nirvakalpa Samadhi, perhaps. Like the great sage Shuka of ancient memory, the Master at that time would walk about in the countryside almost nude and bare of body, as if still in communion with nature, in utter disregard of his surroundings, and absolutely oblivious to the normal bodily needs of food and shelter. He was even taken by most of the village folk around for a madman for his strange, abnormal behavior, and became the target of attacks by the uninformed urchins and unruly elements among them. They're old. The urchins will always be with us. The good sense of a few wise and saner elements who saw the real, quote, divine madness of this great realizer of truth succeeded, however, in rescuing the Master from any possible bodily harm, and he was escorted to their homes in turn. Simple, meager food like milk and fruits was all that he could be persuaded to take as and when he liked, nor could he be, quote, confined, cooped, and cabined in, end quote, for long, for the benefit of the educated or rich, favored few. Like a musk deer which cannot keep the sweet scent and smell of its much-valued musk all to itself, the Master would go out into the open, and soon very large groups of people flocked around this God-man with their long tales of woes and sufferings, mental and bodily ailments of diverse kinds, and no wonder, in a vast number of cases, they were cured by the magic healing touch of the Master. just again and again and again and again and again. That's what he did. Or that's a lot of what he did. His loving care for the indigent children and poor orphans, no less than to the suffering humanity, was something unique, and the same found tangible expression in the starting of new and renovation of old schools, dharmasalas, and poor homes to minister to their needs and alleviate their sufferings in the several places that he visited in later years. The master, however, hated sham and hypocrisy and never countenanced impostors, and one found him all fury and rage on occasions. Oh, so is he so distorted he has rage? And then he would throw stones and missiles at such people with evil thoughts, even as they approached him from a distance, to keep them out of his presence. So he fought fire with fire against the troublemakers who wanted to make trouble in the community around him. And yet, strangely enough, he conferred his benedictions on them by the same token, and many were the souls thus reclaimed and transformed beyond all recognition, and vast families were saved from virtual wreck and ruin. This is not the place to recount the innumerable episodes and incidents of the miracles the Master wrought among the peoples of all walks of life who came under his magnetic spell, or who came seeking for benign help during his wanderings all over the country. As Swami Chinmayanandaji avers in the introduction to this book, it would read like a saga worthy of 100 Christs, and it would, therefore, more appropriately form good material for a separate work on the life and mission of the Master at a later date. This guy writes nice long sentences. The saints, and here we come a paragraph of one sentence, the saints' great love and grace shown to the real sadhakas, yogis, and spiritual seekers who sought his divine guidance was unbounded, and they would always return to their distant homes with the reassurance of mighty and lasting help received in their genuine endeavors thereafter, as if the Master was always by their side. His talks, couched in simple and direct language with homely similes and common examples from the life around, even while they revealed the highest truths of Vedanta, were shorn of any display of scholarship and verbal jugglery, and they made a direct appeal to the devotees, as the home truths he preached had the imprimatur in each case of his own personal experience, practiced, lived, and realized fully. And one of his quotes from Chittagashkita put in, quote, I think Nityananda said, regard the Lord who is in the heart. Dive into it to discover your own real self. Turn the mind inwards again and again by merging the world in the self. Look into the heart, not by the physical sight, but by the subtle vision. To realize oneness in oneself is to attain Brahmanhood. Of all truths, the basic truth is the truth of Brahman, Brahmatattva. Give up the gross joy, attain the subtler, regard the Parabrahman of eternal delight. You yourself experience that you are the pure consciousness. Tattvam asi, thou art that. The glory of the experience is the Ananda Satchit Ananda. And so, that's enough from that in that preface. So that's what he did. I don't know. It looks quite special to me. And so, I think that's about all I can say or care to say for now. I think he was a singular, Nityananda was a singular appearance, like a shooting star across the sky, a beautiful, transcending, magical appearance, that, is gone before you know it. And it's some of the most beautiful experiences are like that. Extremely evanescent, ephemeral, like a butterfly, like a dewdrop, as they say in the sutra. And so, I hope this has been a useful study and listening for you, whoever you are. And I hope you can find resonance to your own true nature. a manifestation of which Nityananda offered to all who crossed his path or saw him, a manifestation of true nature. And very will-intensive demonstration of service. I mean, it was hard to say there was anything else other than serving mobs of people and then building schools and poor homes and helping children and people who were in a bad way in those communities for decades, all alone, you know. It was just him and everyone else. And that's interesting. That's an example for us, I think. Anyway, that'll be it for the series on Nityananda. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week, I may take a pause. At some point, may look into teachings from Nisargadatta. And there is some saying, Nisargadatta, a student told a student who told a chronicler, something like, someone asked Nisargadatta, did you meet Nityananda? He said yes, and said nothing else. They said, what do you think of him, or something? And he said, not a day goes by where I don't think of him. That's interesting. So there's a connection there, obviously. And Nisargadatta has a wonderful teaching as well. So I hope this was instructive and illuminating. And I hope you're well. Take good care of yourselves. See you next time. And good night.